or anything without Jesus, and we need that reminder. So thank you for sharing your voice and your heart with us this morning. And I want to thank all of you this morning for understanding my absence last week. I was at Jonesville doing a concert for the 7 for 70 tour, and that little country church out there raised almost $900 for Hilltop Camp, and we're certainly thankful. We're excited. The guys in the band and I are excited about what God is doing. We are almost at $4,000 for the summer, and we are excited about that. Thank you, Kendall, for stepping up and delivering a great message last Sunday. I listened to the sermon. I thought it was really good. A little weak on humor. A good sermon overall. Actually, I love to hear Kendall preach. In fact, I'd rather hear him preach than eat. I've heard him eat. It's not pretty. Anyway, no, you knew I had to get him at least once on that. In all seriousness, I appreciate the positive comments that we've received during this message. I heard a lot of great things about the message last week, and I listened to it. It was really good. I felt like this series was very important for the church. I think we all understand, Paul's already alluded to it this morning, that we go through trials. We all have difficult times in our lives. Sometimes it's difficult to live in this world and apply God's principles to our lives when everyone around us at times seems like they're not applying those principles. They're not living by the same standards in which we are living, a biblical worldview at the center of our lives. Now, if you've been with us the past couple of weeks, you understand that we're doing our best to teach you how to live in this world, to teach you a better way, how to live in this world, even better than you might already be living. I know a lot of you are already doing a great job at that, but I think all of us can improve. And finding a better way to do something, we've determined, is called a life hack. Now, this term entered into our society in the early 2000s, but we've been doing it forever, basically, finding a creative or resourceful way to do something in this life is known as a life hack. And since it's summertime, and a lot of you are out camping, and a lot of you are out doing cookouts and things like that, I thought it might be good to show you a summertime life hack or two. Let's say you are at a state park, and you don't have a gas grill, and you want to grill out. Now, Kendall's the master of this, so this is for you, all right? I want you to, and there's no joke. I'm really trying to help you out. This is a great life hack. What you do is you take charcoal, and you put it in the egg carton, and then you light the egg carton on fire, and that lights your charcoal more easily and more quickly. Life hack, great stuff, right? You'll use that, won't you? Probably not. But anyway, let's say you find yourself in an emergency situation and you have no water to drink. You're kind of stranded. You're out hiking. You get lost or something like that. But you come upon a stream that's maybe dirty or a pond that's dirty. You got a couple of containers in your backpack, but no water. You can try this life hack where you take a cloth, maybe rip off part of your shirt or something like that, roll it up, and put one end in the dirty water and one end in an empty container. And what that cloth will do is it'll suck that water into there, and it'll filter out all of the dirt and the impurities in your water. A life hack. Now, I would recommend that you maybe boil that water before you drink it, but certainly that is something you could do. Now, this other life hack I'm going to demonstrate for you. I'm going to step over here. If you turn this on, Mike, because our wireless headset is not working. This is one. Let's say you find yourself out in the wilderness, and you want to start a fire, but you didn't bring your matches. But thankfully, in your backpack, you do have maybe a pack of gum. And maybe in something that you're carrying with you, you might have a AA battery with you. Now, this is,
you know, this is very rare, but it could happen. So I want to demonstrate to you what you do is you take the foil off your gum. Now, I would chew this normally, but I'm getting ready to preach, and you don't want to hear that, all right? And so what you do is you cut a little strip of the foil like this. Fold it over. Well, I feel like I should be on TV or something. All right. You fold that over, and then you cut it diagonally at the top, kind of a triangle shape, just enough over here to where you've got a little piece that's holding it together. Don't cut it all the way through, all right? And then you take the foil on this end, and then you touch it on this end, and ouch, that hurts. All right. But anyway, it worked. Now,
it's okay, I'm the fire marshal. No, I'm the fire chaplain, not the marshal. I haven't been promoted yet, I'm the fire chaplain. Whew, kids, do not try that at home. All right? Little ones back there, do not try it. It works. Boy, that worked a whole lot better today than what it worked at home. I wasn't expecting that. Thank you, Lord, I think. But anyway, here's the deal. It's a shame that didn't get on the tape there. That was great. The reality is this. Fire can be a wonderful thing, or it can be a terrible thing, depending on how it's used, depending on how we handle the fire, especially when you live in a society such as Babylon. And we will see that we do live in a society such as Babylon, and we're going to see how in the book of Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego lived under fire in the book of Daniel and in Babylon. This week we're in chapter 3, but I need to remind you of what happened at the tail end of chapter 2. You remember King Nebuchadnezzar had this dream, and in this dream there was a statue. It was made of all kinds of different metals, and Daniel gave the interpretation that said, King, you're the head of gold, and then after you is going to come another empire, and then after you is going to come another empire, and then finally there's going to come a fourth empire, and that one is going to last forever. And King Nebuchadnezzar was so impressed with Daniel's wisdom that he put him in charge of the country. And Daniel had these three Hebrew buddies, and he put them in charge of the province of Babylon. Now, this is important for us to understand for a couple of reasons. All right, first of all, Daniel does not appear in the entire chapter of Daniel 3. I think we can assume that he's probably out of the city. Maybe he's doing business for the country or whatever. But Daniel is not in this chapter anywhere. And I think we can assume that because if Daniel had been in this chapter, he would have been standing up with his three Hebrew buddies. But we don't read of him doing that. So we can assume that he's probably nowhere on site. Another reason why it's important to remember how this story ends is because Nebuchadnezzar ends chapter 2 by falling down before Daniel. And we're going to see that he was willing to fall down before Daniel, but he was not going to fall down before Daniel's God. And Nebuchadnezzar starts thinking about this interpretation of the dream. And he's saying, my kingdom's going to end? You mean I'm going to spend my entire life building this empire, and then it's all going to go away? I don't like this. Okay? So notice the very first verse of chapter 3, verse 1. King Nebuchadnezzar made an image of gold 60 cubits high and 6 cubits wide and set it up on the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. Now, remember again how this chapter ended before, chapter 2. Your kingdom will not last. And Nebuchadnezzar said, oh, yes, it will. Now, when he built that statue, He wanted the whole thing to be gold, not just the head, because what he was doing was saying, okay, if I'm the head right now and I'm gold and I build the whole thing out of gold, what I'm saying to all of you is this: my kingdom is not going to end. My empire is not going to come to an end. It's going to endure. I don't care what Daniel's God says about my kingdom. Here's what I say. I don't care what God's will, Daniel's God's will is for the kingdom. This is my will. He was saying, I intend to build my empire. It's going to last forever. And so what he did was he commissioned this statue to be built, and it was going to represent his will for Babylon. And he didn't want there to be another will in Babylon. So what he did is he gathered all of the people of Babylon together, and he says to everyone while they're there, when the music starts, I want to know that all of us are on the same page with my vision, with my will for Babylon. I want everyone to bow down to this statue. Well, what if I don't agree? Here's what he says in verse 6. Whoever does not fall down and worship will immediately be thrown into a blazing furnace. And so we have this tension going on now. This is a tension that has existed since the beginning of time, all the way back in the Garden of Eden. Will the creature worship the creator, or will the creature worship that which was created? Will the image that God has made, meaning us, bow down to an image that God has not made? That's the question. That's the question that Adam and Eve had to answer. That's the question that they had to answer in the book of Daniel. That's the question that we have to ask ourselves today. What are we worshiping? Who are we worshiping? Who are we going to place first in our lives? And you have to know something about Babylon, all right? And by the way, Babylon stands for any world empire that does not honor the God that we serve. Any empire that is a pretty much godless society. One thing we need to understand is that Babylon has firepower. In other words, Babylon has resources to pressure you, for you to get on the same page as they are. They're going to do whatever they can possibly do to get you to conform to their way of life. So here's the first thing we need to understand this morning. Faith is always under fire in Babylon. Fiery trials are not the exception. They are the rule. Especially when you live in a culture that does not embrace the same morals, the same convictions that we do. Paul told Timothy, if you sell out to Jesus, if you follow him, if you make him the center of your life, I don't care what culture it is, you are going to experience fire in your life. But the fire that is in your life might actually serve God's purpose. See, that's the wonderful thing that we need to understand here this morning. There could be a purpose for the trial in which you're going through right now. We know of a guy in the New Testament, a guy by the name of Peter, one of Jesus' apostles, and he wrote two letters that are in our Bible. In those letters, he used a lot of language like Daniel does in this particular passage of Scripture. You are exiles, you are aliens, you're pilgrims in this world. And at the very end of the first letter, Peter writes this. He's basically saying, I'm writing you from Babylon. Now, this is code for saying, I'm writing you from Rome. I'm writing you from another godless society. And here's what he told the Christians who are living in a godless society. These trials will show that your faith is genuine. It's being tested just as fire tests and purifies gold. Though your faith is far more precious than mere gold. So when your faith remains strong through many trials, it will bring you much praise and glory and honor on the day when Jesus Christ is revealed to the whole world. Peter is saying this, your faith is going to be tested in this world. And the reason that your faith is going to be tested is so that you can be trusted, so that God can trust you, so that when he needs you in a difficult situation, he knows that you're going to come through. Now, the people of this day would have understood this metaphor that Peter is using. Back in the day when they would mine silver, when they would mine gold, they had to put it through a purifying process. They do the same thing now, and I don't know if it's this way or not, but basically a lot of people saw this happening, and what they would have to do is get all of the impurities out of the gold or the silver. All of the elements in the ore that were not gold or silver had to be removed. So what they would do is they would build a big fire underneath this kettle, and they would they'd put the water in it, and they would fill it with all of the ore that they had mined, and they would turn up the heat. And the ore would melt, and all of the impurities would rise to the top, and all of this that was laying on the top of the water was called slag, and they would clean that slag off of there, and you would know that the gold or the silver was pure when you could look into it and see your reflection. And it says in Proverbs 17:3, fire tests the purity of silver and gold. And then it goes on to say, and the Lord tests your heart. I think that teaches us that every once in a while, sometimes God will allow us to come under fire. Now, understand, we're not under fire because God wants to break us. God's not being mean. We're under fire because he wants to display a work in us. He wants to display what he's doing in and through our lives. And Daniel's friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, their faith is going to be put on display. And we see that they're willing to stand in the line of fire. And so it says this: at this time, some astrologers came forward and denounced the Jews. By the way, this is, just so you know, anti-Semitism is not a new thing. It's been going on forever. And they said, there are some Jews whom you have set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who pay no attention to you, your majesty. They neither serve your gods nor worship the image of gold you have set up. Now, it's very important to understand that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they were not acting like obnoxious jerks while they were living in Babylon. They weren't drawing attention to themselves. They weren't waving big flags and going, na, 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 look at us. We're not going to bow down to the king. They weren't doing that. They were just living out their faith. Just going about their everyday business, living out their faith in God in a culture where most didn't accept their faith. And I'm telling you this today because throughout this series, we've talked about the fact that you don't have to be annoying. You don't have to be obnoxious. We don't have to get on Facebook and rant about all of the things that we think are wrong with the world. But I don't care how meek you are and how much you just live out your faith without causing too much of a disturbance, there's going to be a time in your life when Babylon pushes back. There's going to be a time in your life when society is going to get right in your face and it's going to test you. There's going to come a time when your refusal to bow down is going to appear as judgment to all of the people that live around you. And so it says, furious with rage, Nebuchadnezzar summoned Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So these men were brought before the king, and Nebuchadnezzar said to them, is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the image of gold I've set up? Now when you hear the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipe, and all kinds of music, basically this was Nebuchadnezzar's worship team, all right? When you hear this music, if you are ready to fall down and worship the image that I have made, very good. But if you do not worship it, you will be thrown immediately into the blazing furnace. And then he says this, then what God will be able to rescue you from my hand? Interesting question. Why did Nebuchadnezzar give them a second chance? I mean, that's not like him, is it? I mean, he overreacts a lot, you know, and usually goes to the extreme. Why do you think he gave them another chance? I think the reason he gave them another chance is because they were good at what they did. Babylon flourished under their leadership. Nebuchadnezzar liked them. And he knew that they were good at what they did, even though they lived with their own values. Nebuchadnezzar didn't want to lose them. Even though they lived under their own convictions, Nebuchadnezzar said, they are of benefit to me. He didn't want to lose them. He's basically saying they're just like Daniel. He was serving as God, and that's fine. Just keep doing your work. But on this issue, Nebuchadnezzar couldn't compromise. He needed everyone in the country on the same page saying, we believe in what you're saying, and we agree that your will needs to be done, not the God of Daniel. I just about bet Nebuchadnezzar's thinking, all right, guys, this is real cute. You've stood up for your God. This is wonderful. But now it's time to get real. Time for you to change teams, so to speak. And when he said, if you don't, I'm going to throw you into the fire, and then what God will be able to rescue you from my hand. What he was saying is this. All right, guys, let's get real for a moment. Your God lost. And if your God was so great, why are you exiles anyway? If your God is so wonderful, why did he allow us to take you captive? I'm sure that's going on in his mind. It's time for you guys to recognize that you're playing for the wrong team. And you need to leave that God and you need to bow down to this statue and get on my team. Change your jersey. Bow down. Worship my gods. What do you do? What do you do when the pressures of society are telling you, you need to just get with the program, you need to change jerseys, you need to find a new team, you need to be on our team? Well, you have two options. Here's option number one. Bow along to get along. Bow along to get along. Some Christians' way of dealing with fire is to water down their convictions. These three Hebrew boys could have said to themselves, hey, you know, we can just bow on the outside, but on the inside we really don't mean it. You know, we can bow with our fingers crossed, so to speak. They could have said, well, just this one time we'll bow down and then we'll just run to church and ask for forgiveness and everything be okay. God's gracious anyway, right? They could have said, hey, we're the only ones taking a stand for God. If anything happens to us, what's God going to do? God needs us, so we'd better go ahead and bow down so that God can use us in the future. They could have said, hey, this is just politics. Come on, I'll do whatever I need to do in the public arena, and then I'll just go to church and I'll worship God on the side. You see, that's how some people survive in Babylon. But we don't want to survive, we want to thrive. The way some people survive is they keep more than one jersey in their closet, and they'll change the jerseys out for whatever team they need to be on that particular time. You come to church on Sunday, you got one jersey on, but then you go Monday through Friday, you might change jerseys several times depending on the occasion. Here's the thing. Those people, you might say, well, I don't know what you're talking about. You know, that doesn't really happen to me all that much. Well, maybe it's because your faith isn't where it needs to be. You know, it's been my experience that lukewarm Christians don't come under fire very much. Lukewarm Christians just kind of go along, bow along, so that they can fit in with society. And that's the option that a lot of people choose. But that's not what Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego chose. Option number two is they chose to stand for God and withstand the heat. They decided to go into the fire with their faith. And they didn't have a plan B. All they had was plan A. We're going to honor God. For them to dishonor God in the furnace was more foolish to them than honoring God and facing the heat. And so Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to him, King Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to deliver us from it, and he will deliver us from your majesty's hand. But even if he does not, we want you to know, your majesty, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold that you have set up. See, they knew that their God had power. But they also knew that their God had purposes. And even though they didn't understand all of God's purposes, they were going to serve him. They didn't know for sure what was going to happen after they were thrown into the fire. But they knew that the love of God was not going to be away from them. They knew that the fire was not going to separate them from God's love. And so they weren't sure what God was going to do. But they knew what they were going to do. They were going to honor God. And they ultimately knew that was fireproof. And I want to show you a picture of one of the most influential women of the 20th century. Most of you know this picture. This is Rosa Parks. It was 1955. She was 42 years old. She'd had a hard day at work. She gets on a bus in Montgomery, Alabama, and before long, a white man comes up to her and tells her to get up. He wants her seat, and she refuses to give it to him, even though that was the law. And she was arrested for defiance, and later in her book, Quiet Strength, she says that it wasn't that she was tired, because she was tired, but that's not why she didn't get up and give that seat to that man. She was tired of giving in. And she wrote, I wasn't trying to make history that day, but I was ready to make a statement. She said, I knew that the Lord would give me strength to face whatever happened by me not getting up. It was time for me to take a stand, or in my case, sit down. And these three young Hebrew boys, they looked the most powerful man in the world in the eye, and they said, we will not bow down to your gods. And I think we are never more free in our lives than when we live by our convictions. There's something liberating about reaching that place in your life where you're going to live by your convictions no matter what the cost might be. And so the three Hebrew children, they're bound, but they're free. Now, that doesn't make any sense. They're bound, they're tied up. And the king was so mad, he throws them into the, or he's getting ready to throw them into the fire. And not only does he bound them up, but he makes the fire hotter than it normally is. It was so hot that the men who took them to throw them in the fire, when they went to throw them in, they were burned up. They died. But look at what happened. Then King Nebuchadnezzar leaped to his feet in amazement and asked his advisors, weren't there three men that we tied up and threw into that fire? And they replied, certainly, Majesty. He said, look, I see four men walking around in the fire, unbound and unharmed, and the fourth looks like a son of the gods. Now, isn't that amazing that they were set free in the fire? The fire didn't singe their hair. The fire didn't fill their clothes with smoke. The only thing that the fire burned up was whatever it was that had bound them, whatever it was that was holding them together. That's the only thing apparently the fire burned up, because they were free and they were walking around. And then the Bible says this thing, Nebuchadnezzar said, praise be to the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and rescued his servants. They trusted in him and defied the king's command and were willing to give up their lives rather than worship and serve any god except their own God. Therefore, I decree that the people of any nation or language who say anything against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be cut into pieces and their houses be burned into piles of rubble. I told you he likes to overreact, all right? Now look at this. Then he said, for no other God can save in this way. The fire did not get the last word. God did. And here's the deal. We live in Babylon, so don't be surprised when Babylon pressures us. Babylon will always have fire power. And the question is, are we going to have the faith to be fireproof? Let me quickly, I know it's already 9:30, but I'll quickly move through these life hacks, heat hacks, if you will. Here's number one, meet God in the furnace. Because they didn't worship a false god outside the furnace, they got to worship and be in the midst of the one true God inside the furnace. Isn't that awesome? See, here's the thing we need to understand, and I know we preach this a lot, but just because we have faith in God, that does not mean the absence of fire. It doesn't mean the absence of trouble in our lives. But God does promise to be with us in those times. Nebuchadnezzar says, I see four men, and the fourth one looks like a son of the gods. Now, I want to tell you something. When you follow Jesus, when you sell out to Jesus, when you live for Jesus in Babylon, you're going to meet Jesus in the fire, because fire is going to come, and he's going to be there for you. There's a great passage in the Old Testament. It says, when you pass through the waters, I'll be with you. When you pass through the rivers, they will not sweep over you. When you walk through the fire, you will not be burned. The flames will not set you ablaze, for I am the Lord your God, the Holy One of Israel. Notice that Isaiah does not say if, he says when. You notice that? And it doesn't say around, it says through. It doesn't say when you go around the fire. It doesn't say when you go around the waters. It says when you go through it, I'll be with you. He's saying you're going to go through these things. And if you're sitting out there, if you've ever had this thought in your mind, boy, I'd love to be closer to God. I'd love more intimacy with God. Well, you may have to go through the fire to get there. There's a story that's told of a minister in China by the name of Chen Mi Lin. He came to Christ when he was 19 years old, and he started a couple of little house churches in his village, and then he got arrested, and they put him into prison, and they gave him an indignity that's unfathomable to us. His job every day in that prison was to keep the pipes clean in the cesspool. And so he would get up every single day and he would be forced to walk through human sewage to clear the pipes. And his testimony is that after he was done vomiting, he would clear the drainage pipes. But he went on to say, that place of disgust became my garden of prayer. He said the smell in that place was so bad that the guards would drop him off and then they would go as far away from that place as possible. And he said it became the only place in that prison where I could sing and pray and worship God and the guards wouldn't beat me for it. It became his time to be with God. And he said his favorite song was, and he walks with me, and he talks with me. Faith doesn't mean that you're going to be saved from the furnace. It means you'll never have to enter it alone. And that you can meet God in the furnace. And so that means the second life hack is this. You must trust God with the flames. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego said, our lives are are not in your hands, King Nebuchadnezzar. Our lives are in God's hands. I think one of the greatest lines in this story is when these guys look at Nebuchadnezzar and they say, even if he doesn't save us, we're still not going to bow down to this idol. They had come to the conclusion, and we would do well to follow their lead, that the only thing that they were responsible for was obedience, and the outcome is up to God. We do what's right. Let God handle the outcome. Now, some of you, you already know the story of Dunkirk. Maybe some of you, has anybody gone to see the movie yet? It opened Friday. I want to go see the movie. Or it came out Thursday, I think. This was before the United States entered the war and the British soldiers were backed up to the English Channel, about 300,000 of them. They were about to be annihilated or at the very least, those who survived would be taken as prisoners of war. And then the most amazing thing happens, and I don't want to give you a spoiler alert, but word got out of the situation, and people from the other side of the channel, a ragtag armada, if you will, a bunch of tiny boats start showing up, and all kinds of regular people came across the channel to rescue their soldiers and very likely saved the war effort. But in the midst of that event, before anyone knew that anybody was coming, a British officer sent out this message, just three little words, but if not. But if not. I don't know if that's in the movie or not. I can't wait to see it, see if they put this in here. Because what that British officer was doing was quoting Daniel 3. He was quoting this story that we're talking about today. He was sending the message to his troops, we hope that deliverance comes, but if not, we will not bow down, we will not surrender, we will not give up, we will not let the enemy take over. God is absolutely free to do whatever he wants to do. And what if that story had been different? What if when those three boys were thrown into the fire, they had burned up?
Well, it's because they didn't have enough faith.
No, don't tell me that. They would have said it's because their faith that happened. You know, they trusted God in the flames. And here's something we need to remember. Sometimes God delivers us from the flames. Sometimes God delivers us while we're in the fire. And sometimes God just delivers us unto himself. A fireproof faith is when you just stop focusing on God's power and you start trusting in God's character. And your faith shouldn't be all about what God might do in your life, but your faith is all about who God is. And you trust in his goodness and you trust in his purposes. And when you get to that point in your life, you stop being a living sacrifice and you start being a living sermon. Look at what you could do. This is the last hack. We'll close with this. Let God turn heat into light. Think about it. How many of our heroes of the Bible lived furnace-free lives? Not very many. No. Even more, the people that you have looked up to in your life, your spiritual mentors, how many of those people that shaped your faith, how many of those lived furnace-free lives? Not very many, probably. Because I think God uses the fire that are in people's lives, people who are close to him, to maybe thaw out the frozen hearts of the people that are around you. Those people that are so far away, God might use the fire of the furnace in your life to melt their hearts. Remember that Chinese preacher that I told you about? Goes by the name of George Chen. After 20 years, he was let out of prison. He went back to his village, assuming that those little village churches would be gone. Instead, he found 5,000 Christians waiting to honor him. You know why? Because when they heard about Chin Li Min, they considered that if Jesus is worth dying for, he must be worth living for. And maybe, just maybe, God has you in the furnace right now to bring your Nebuchadnezzar into the kingdom. As we close, I'm going to ask our musicians to come. I want to encourage you, remind you that we live in Babylon, and the majority of our culture does not share our values. They don't honor God, and we are right where we need to be. So shine your light. And let me remind you that even though it might be rough here, we're still a pretty blessed people compared to the rest of the world. We have brothers and sisters all around the world who are literally facing the furnace. Christianity Today reported that last year alone, 5,000 Christians died for their faith in Jesus. Right now, it's estimated that 70,000 Christians are in labor camps in North Korea. Most of us don't have any idea what a real furnace is like. And so as we close, there's a couple things I want to do. One, if you'd like to make a decision for Jesus Christ and be baptized into him, we encourage you to come. Second, I'm going to ask you to stand right now. And before we sing, I want you to pray with me for the persecuted church around the world. Would you just take a moment? I'm going to give you about 30 seconds or so of silence as the ladies start to play this song of decision. I want you to just pray yourselves to the Lord for the persecuted church, and then we'll sing a song of decision. Let's bow together.